Willkommen bei Audible. Gute Unterhaltung.
The Warringham Chronicles, an Audible original by Rebecca Garblay. Adapted by Florian Belt. English dramatization by Nicholas Pegg. Narrated by Miriam Margulies. Part 2. The Wheel of Fortune.
The time, June 1367. The place, Valladolid, Castile. Robin woke up on a dirty blanket in a corner of the tent that he was sharing with a dozen other men. The air was stifling, every breath hot and pungent with the stench of diarrhea and death. He felt the cramps starting up again, but like his comrades, he no longer had the strength to move. The entire camp had been struck by dysentery. From the princes to the lowliest peasants, the fever and its terrible symptoms were running wild. Clean water was in desperately short supply, and there were no longer enough healthy people to care for the sick. Men were dying like dogs. For 2 days and nights, Robin had been lying beside the bloated, fly-blown corpse of his friend, Bertrand Guillard. But in his high fever, he barely noticed. He drifted fitfully in and out of sleep, reliving the events of the last few weeks in a tumbling sequence of incoherent images. The bloodshed of the battle near the little town of Najera. The army moving off to Burgos, a few days after their victory. Making camp outside the town, close by the monastery of Las Huelgas. King Pedro, Pedro the Cruel, reinstated to the throne of Castile and León, swearing a holy oath in the cathedral at Burgos. An oath to repay his debts to Prince Edward, the Black Prince, as soon as he could. Easter. Yes, that had been at Easter. But then Pedro had explained that he couldn't raise the money in Burgos, and he had persuaded Prince Edward to wait in Valladolid with his army, while Pedro rode to Seville, from where he promised he would send the money. So they waited in Valladolid. And they waited. The weather was hot, unbelievably hot. Supplies ran low. There were too many people living together in too small a space. The latrines overflowed. The water went bad. And then the sickness came. One morning towards the end of June, Robin woke from a deep and unusually dreamless sleep and felt a peculiar sensation. He was thirsty, but there was nothing unusual about that. Ever since he became ill, he'd been waking up with a terrible thirst. He gazed at the walls of the tent, gathering his thoughts. And all of a sudden it struck him. He was hungry, too. With a rush of relief, he sat up. I'm hungry, he thought. That means I'm feeling better. I'm going to be all right. He cast his eyes around the tent, but any idea that the others might be recovering, too, was swiftly dashed. All around him lay men, some of them gasping and shivering with the fever, others as still and silent as cadavers, which some of them probably were. A sudden thought flashed into Robin's head. Leofric, was the boy alive or dead? He struggled to his feet to begin searching for his young squire, and was shocked to find how weak he felt. His legs barely supported him. He looked around the crowded tent in the hope of finding somewhere to wash, and beside the entrance he saw a bucket half full of water and even a little lump of soap. He staggered across to the bucket and clumsily washed himself with heavy, sluggish limbs. By the time he was finished, he felt utterly exhausted. It was all he could do to resist the temptation to lie down again, but he summoned up what little strength he had, pulled on the least filthy clothes he could find, and made his way between the rows of straw beds, looking at each face in turn. Most of them were familiar, but neither Leofric nor Henry Fitzroy were among them. Robin took a deep breath and made his way out of the tent, squinting against the blinding sunlight. All around him, arranged in neat rows as far as the eye could see, were the tents of the camp. Those of the Black Prince and his brother, the Duke of Lancaster, stood some distance away on the flat top of a little hill. Robin looked in every direction. There was nobody to be seen. "My God," he thought. "Are they all sick? Is everybody dying?" And then, inevitably, came the next thought. The horses. Who was taking care of them? He started to explore, looking into one tent after another and finding the same scene in each, until at length in one of the kitchen tents he found a small gathering of people, a handful of archers, a couple of knights from Aquitaine with whom he wasn't particularly well acquainted, and finally, to his tremendous surprise, the dark-haired girl who used to make eyes at him every night during the feasts at Bordeaux Castle. It was the first time he'd set eyes on her since then. She was busy kneading some dough on a table that wasn't quite as clean as it ought to have been. Robin approached her on his wobbly legs.
"I'm glad to see you well, madam."
"Oh, it's you. You don't look so good, my lord. Can I get you anything?"
"A sip of beer, perhaps, and a crust of bread, if you have one."
"Coming right up." "Here we are. A cup of ale and a piece of rather dry bread. I'm afraid the catering isn't quite up to our usual standards."
"Thank you. You're not sick?"
"Me? No. Not yet, anyway."
"How bad is it? I mean, how many people?"
"Just about everyone."
"I didn't know you'd come to Spain with us."
"Better than dying of boredom in Bordeaux, or even worse, back at home in Limoges."
"I suppose so. What's your name? I've wanted to know for ages."
"Constance. Constance Froissart."
"It's a pleasure, Constance. Warringham."
"Yes, I know."
"Oh, I don't suppose you happen to have seen my squire. English boy, blonde, and deaf-mute. He's called Leofric."
"Oh, yes, I know your squire, sir. I'm afraid I haven't seen him since we got here."
"I've got to look for him."
"You ought to get some rest."
"I'll be all right. I just need to get my strength back. Do you know anything about Prince Edward and Lancaster?"
"Sick, both of them. They say Lancaster's on the mend. I don't know about Prince Edward, but I know a man who will, your friend Fitzroy. He's been with him for days. He's been lucky like me, didn't get sick."
"Well, then, I have to go and find him. Are you going to be here later?"
"Of course. Come back this afternoon and there'll be fresh bread. And I'll look out what's left of the dried meat. We'll see if we can't rustle up a proper meal for you."
"That sounds wonderful."
In a parched, dusty and poorly fenced paddock, Robin found about 50 horses penned up together. A handful of them had already perished of thirst, but most had been kept alive by the other thing that Robin found in the paddock. Leofric. As Robin approached, he saw that the boy was busy watering the horses, trotting back and forth from a nearby cistern with a full bucket in each hand. He was clearly in good health, his skin deeply tanned in contrast to the pale, ashen figures lying in their sickbeds at the camp. From the shade of a tree, Robin watched with pride as the boy went about his work, and then he stepped out into the sunlight, his shadow falling across the youngster. Leofric looked up in surprise, and then his face broke into a delighted smile. For a moment he made as if to fling his arms around Robin's neck before collecting himself and bowing in a manner more befitting a squire. Robin grinned and pulled the boy towards him in an affectionate hug.
You didn't get sick. And here you are, doing what everyone else has forgotten. I knew if you were alive, I'd find you here. And my faithful old Brutus. Look at you, you poor old nag. You're all skin and bone. They haven't had much food, have they? Have you got your slate? Ah, good lad. Not much food, and especially no water. I took care of them whenever I could. Well done, old friend. And now I'm here, I'm going to help you. After all, there's nobody around to see, is there? Nobody who might catch sight of a knight watering the horses and come up with the idea that I might be a runaway groom from my own barony. You're cross with me for kidnapping you from Warringham, aren't you? And you're right. I'm sorry. You're far too young for the war. Well, what's the matter then? I thought you was cross with me because I did not take care of you when you was sick. Oh, well, I'm sure you had a good reason. Peter de Grey. Oh, him, my best friend. He was not very sick. And after 3 days, he was back on duty. He put me on sentry watch, and he did not let me stay with you. Charming. I pretended not to understand him, but that didn't help. He hit me. Oh, Leofric. And he told me he would lock me up if I like that better than sentry duty. Well, it's hardly surprising. De Grey hates me, Leofric, and I have only myself to blame for that. Oh, well. Try not to think about it anymore, hmm? Come on, let's see what we can do for these horses, shall we?
There wasn't much that could be done. The paddock was far too small for so many horses, and the bone-dry grass was poached and almost eaten away. In a storage tent nearby, they found some food, but such a small amount that they didn't dare give it all to the horses. They were at least able to quench the poor creature's thirst, and Robin managed to treat a few minor injuries and inflammations brought on by neglect and the burning summer heat. Finally, they fashioned a makeshift harness out of ropes, and with the help of the two strongest horses, they dragged the carcasses of the dead animals out of the paddock.
God, it's a pitiful thing. And all in the name of this damned war. I just hope Pedro finally paid the bill while I was on my sickbed. He didn't. How much do you know? They say he betrayed us. He won't pay. He got his throne back, so he feels safe. And we are not exactly a very scary army at the moment. That's true enough. What's this? And that's not all. While we are stuck here, Henry Kay of Truster What's It is very angry and marching on Aquitaine with his soldiers. Oh, Jesus. And here I was thinking the war was over and we could just get out of here. Well, anywhere. away from here. That's the main thing. Away from war and death. Away from tiny portions of disgusting dried meat. Away from Peter de Grey hitting you. Away from the whole knightly splendour of it all. Or haven't you had enough of it? But where to? That's the trouble. I've no idea. But we'll work something out. I don't know if I want to leave. I have never had friends like the ones I have here. Yes, I know Leofric. But then they go into battle and they get killed, don't they? Back at home, people die of plague or hunger. Or the sheriff hangs them. There is a place for us here. In England, there is not. Well, I didn't say anything about going back to England. But you thought it, didn't you? Jesus, I must have been mad when I taught you to write. You've never answered back before. Oh, well, I think I ought to go and find out how our princes are faring. I must go to Sentry Dutty. I'm late already. You'd better run then. And Leofric, if you get any more trouble from de Grey, just let me know, will you? Good lad. I don't know where I'll be for the rest of today, but let's meet here again tomorrow morning, all right? Off you go then. And Leofric, good to see you.
For a while, Robin wandered aimlessly around the camp. There was a little more activity now than there had been a few hours ago. Those who were healthy or recovering from the sickness were sitting together in the shade of the tents, passing the time talking or throwing dice. From the direction of the armory came the ringing song of a hammer. By the entrance of one of the kitchen tents, the sergeant of Robin's company of archers was flirting with a maid. Robin made his way up the gentle slope of the hill, where Prince Edward and Lancaster were encamped. He was hoping to find Fitzroy and to learn more about Pedro and Enrique of Trastámara. But the guards outside the Black Prince's tent turned him away, telling him that Prince Edward was unwell, and their orders were that he was not to be disturbed. But they were willing enough to relay to Fitzroy the message that Lord Warringham was well, and would like to speak with him as soon as possible. Having achieved no more than that, Robin wandered back through the little cluster of tents which housed Lancaster and his entourage. Here it was even quieter. There was no guard outside Lancaster's tent, just the Duke himself, sitting in the shade of the canopy, alone in a comfortable chair, poring over the pieces on a chessboard in front of him. As Robin approached, he raised his head.
Ah, Warringham. Good God, man, you look like death.
With respect, my lord, I think we all do.
I'm sure. And yet today, I feel truly alive again. A messenger came this morning. I have a son.
My lord, how wonderful. Happy news after so much death.
It is, isn't it? He was born on the 15th of April. Not 2 weeks after the Battle of Nehara.
The messenger took his time getting here?
Well, that's the chaos of war. It doesn't matter.
Is the Duchess well?
She is, thank God.
Congratulations, my lord.
No, don't go. Now that you're here, sit down and play a game of chess.
I'm afraid I'll disappoint you, my lord. I'm a hopeless player.
Really? I'm surprised. Why is that?
I've just never had much chance to improve my game.
Do you know why they call it the Game of Kings?
Because you sacrifice your pawns to protect yourselves, thought Robin in a flash of anger. But he bit his tongue.
Because it's about strategy, I suppose.
That's a polite way of putting it. Strategy, in this case, means the ability to think deviously and set the cleverest traps.
I suppose you could put it that way.
That's not really your nature, is it, Warringham? You're a straightforward sort of fellow.
Not necessarily straightforward, but I'm certainly naive.
Your modesty, Sir Knight, is so disarming as to border on the suspicious. Well, unlike you, Warringham, I am an excellent chess player. And I'll tell you something. I always win by the clever use of my knights.
Because the knights' moves are the hardest to predict?
Exactly so.
Does that make you a knight, my lord?
Naive, you say. Don't make me laugh. Naive. That's what my brother called you, isn't it? Don't you think I've forgotten?
He did.
Yes, Warringham, if I were one of these chessmen, I'd be this little knight. And what about you?
I'd probably be... No. I'd rather not be a piece on a chessboard.
Oh, but we all are, every one of us. Black and white figures in a never-ending game between God and his fallen vassal. Kings, pawns, bishops, knights. But you, Warringham, you're a tricky one to classify. Why did you save the life of that stupid old Frenchman? That's what I'd like to know. I simply couldn't fathom it.
I just said what I thought.
In a way that made it impossible for any man of honour to disagree with you. Even de Grey. Poor man, he was so furious, he almost swallowed his tongue. But still not half as angry as my brother, of course. Now he was incensed.
Was he? I thought he took it rather well.
Then maybe you are naive after all. There's nothing my brother hates more than a breach of loyalty. Loyalty is his entire creed. And you weren't loyal, Warringham. You were honest. Most unwise.
My lord, do I understand you correctly? You're telling me to beware of your brother, the prince.
Perhaps.
Why?
Lancaster gave no answer. He placed his knight back on the board, stroked the row of pawns with his finger, and then casually checkmated Robin's king.
What are your plans for the future? What are you going to do when this Spanish nightmare is over at last?
I suppose it's going to depend on what happens next. I understand Enrique is advancing on Aquitaine. If that's true, the war's hardly over yet.
It's certainly a mess. Pedro isn't going to pay, I'm sure of that.
Why don't we just seize what he promised us? Go and take the Bay of Biscay.
What'd be the point? My brother had the same idea, but it's just not possible. We haven't the money left to maintain an occupying force. Particularly as Edward's going to have his hands full just holding on to Aquitaine.
So, the whole thing has been in vain. A complete waste. Oh.
Too early to tell. We'll see. God, that damn dysentery. I've never been so sick in my life. I was sure I was going to die.
Yes, me too.
Well, it turns out we were both wrong. The world's going to have to put up with us for a little longer yet. Now then, shall we play another game?
Constance had kept her promise. When Robin returned to the kitchen tent just after dusk, she welcomed him with a warm smile and fresh bread.
There. Would you like some dried beans with it?
No. I don't think I'm quite ready for that just yet. I'll tell you what I would like. I'd like you to come and sit with me.
All right. Did you find your squire?
Yes. He's well.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Robin ate ravenously. The bread was beautifully soft and still warm on the inside. The wine, on the other hand, was miserably watered down, and its sour aftertaste coaxed an ominous gurgle from Robin's beleaguered stomach. But that didn't bother him. Just to eat and drink again felt like a minor miracle. When he had had his fill, he sat back and looked at Constance.
So, you're from Limoges?
That's right. My father's an officer of the city militia. We used to have a little vineyard, but it was plundered by some Frenchmen. We had to abandon it.
That's dreadful.
Anyone with land has suffered a lot in the war. That's probably true everywhere.
And how did you become one of Princess Joan's ladies-in-waiting? That's what you are, aren't you?
Yes. My mother's a distant cousin of the Bishop of Limoges. He took me to Bordeaux. I've got 7 more sisters, you see. So my father was pretty desperate. He couldn't send us all to the convent or marry us all off. It was too expensive.
No brothers at all?
Mm-mm.
Poor old father, thought Robin. To marry off 8 daughters would cost a fortune. He politely changed the subject.
How come you're here? Joan stayed in Bordeaux with the little princess.
She can spare me when her husband is away and she doesn't have to hold a large court. And I always prefer to be with the knights.
She looked at Robin in a way that smacked more of a challenge than an invitation. He remembered what de Marin had said about her on his first evening in Bordeaux, and wondered whether it was true. He couldn't deny that he found her attractive. Her pretty dress and flowing curls reminded him so much of Alice. He glanced at her a little furtively, but she gave no physical sign of responding to the thoughts that were clearly written on his face. So he smiled and crossed his arms and stretched backwards in his chair, inwardly chastising himself for presuming to guess her intentions. It would be a few more days before he found out for sure. Little by little, order returned to the camp. Most of the administration was handled by Peter de Grey, and although there was little love lost between them, Robin had to admit that the man had a talent for organisation. De Grey thought of everything, assigning appropriate tasks to every individual who was strong enough to work. Robin was placed in charge of the funeral command, a job he accepted without complaint, although it was a truly terrible one. In the unforgiving heat of the Spanish summer, the dead decomposed with frightening speed, so they had to be buried as swiftly as possible. But mercifully, within a few days of Robin's recovery, the sickness in the camp was past its peak, and the death rate began to subside. Many were still sick, but the epidemic had done its worst. At the earliest opportunity, Robin approached de Grey to suggest that the time had come to devote greater effort and resources to the welfare of the horses.
One of these days, we'll be setting off back across the mountains to Aquitaine, and we'll need every animal we've got.
There are more important things for you to be getting on with. I can detail some soldiers to look after the horses.
Oh, but de Grey, foot soldiers don't know the first thing about horses. I do. I breed them at Warringham. I know all about them. I know what they need. Or do you want to walk back to Bordeaux?
Since you put it that way. Oh, very well, if you absolutely insist.
Oh, and one other thing. Can you excuse my squire from sentry duty? He's excellent with horses too, and I need his help.
De Grey's face made it clear that his patience was exhausted, but nonetheless he couldn't refuse. Now that Robin had recovered from the sickness, De Grey had no right to deprive him of his squire.
Oh, very well. As soon as his watch is over today, I'll see that he's sent to you.
Thank you, sir. I'm most grateful.
De Grey returned Robin's cool bow and stalked away. At long last, Robin was in his element. The horses were now his responsibility. The task before him was enormous, but he was undaunted. He wasted no time in informing his archers that their dissolute lives of leisure at the camp had come to an end. Each man Robin deemed fit for duty was assigned a task. The army had arrived with more than 1,000 horses, and although there were now only about 700 left, it was still a colossal number to look after. Having given Leofric and the men the job of staking out and fencing every area of grassland around the camp, which might usefully serve as pasture, Robin concentrated on taking a full inventory of food supplies. Although there wasn't much, there was a little more than he had dared to hope. Within 3 days, Robin and his team had successfully restored all the animals to a lifestyle far better than the parlous conditions under which they'd been left to waste away during the epidemic. Once Robin was satisfied that all his charges were reasonably accommodated, he sent most of the soldiers back to camp, retaining only those who had proved themselves adept with the animals. These men joined forces with the grooms who had been spared the dysentery, and under Robin's guiding hand, they began to master the daily routine. Before long, Robin had resumed his riding lessons for the squires, who flocked to him eagerly in spite of the heat. The work and the sense of purpose agreed with them all, not least with Robin himself, who grew stronger every day and was soon as fit and as tanned as Leofric.
I think you must be the luckiest lover I've had in a long time.
Robin propped himself up on one elbow and looked at Constance. He ran a fingertip along the contour of her breast. She was shameless, in the truest sense of the word. She rarely spoke about her lovers, but when she did, it was without embarrassment. And she had taught Robin things he had never dreamed of.
I'd say that any of your lovers was a lucky man.
That's not what I meant, silly.
No, I know what you meant. And maybe you're right. I've always been better with horses than with people.
That's not surprising. Horses are innocent, just like you.
Naive.
It was a word that he'd thought about a great deal in recent times. And he'd come to the conclusion that it wasn't the worst thing in the world to be naive. And he knew that he often was.
Do you spend a lot of time looking after your horses in Warringham?
Yes, I do.
Isn't that a bit unusual for a noble lord, I mean?
I'm not all that grand, you know. Warringham is a very insignificant little place out in the countryside. All very down to earth.
But you're a crown vassal. An earl.
That's just a title. What does it even mean? So what if the king summons me to London now and then? I'm sure he forgets all about Warringham the rest of the time. And the fief isn't big enough to give much of the land to vassals, so I don't have many. No, don't let the title deceive you. I'm just a country knight.
But you're not a poor country knight.
No, not all that poor. Thanks to the horse breeding, you see. But I'm not rich either. Times are hard in old England.
And in Aquitaine too. Hey, you're not falling asleep, are you?
Yes, I am.
Don't you dare.
God, Constance, I'm exhausted. Are you entirely without mercy?
You only think you're exhausted. You can carry on. Just you leave it to me.
She was right, of course. She was always right. He could carry on, and she knew how to arouse him. As he lay beneath her with his eyes closed, feeling it starting to gather again inside him, she suddenly paused and looked down at him.
Tell me your name.
What?
Your first name. I don't know it, tell me.
No.
But I want to know...
Why? Why right now? Go on. Keep going. That felt so good.
Tell me your name first.
I can't. It's kind of a vow. I'm sorry, I can't explain.
How unfortunate.
Well, come on. Why are you... What difference does it make?
You want me, but you want me to be a stranger as well. Now, that's not the way it works. It's time for you to make up your mind. One way or the other.
No, you're wrong. I'm not a stranger. Why am I a stranger? Just because you don't know my name? What the hell does a name mean anyway? Now, please, come on. Before my abilities completely desert me for the night.
I want to know so that I can call you by your name in my mind.
What? Why?
Why do you think, stupid? I'm in love with you.
In love? With me? Oh, come on. That'll pass soon enough.
I wouldn't be so sure.
From beneath the lush curtain of curls that hung over Constance's face, a solitary tear dropped onto her breast. Robin hadn't bargained on this, and he was deeply upset. Up until now, everything about Constance had been so wonderfully simple and straightforward. She was an experienced courtesan, and he was just another lucky young knight among many. But these tears told a different story. They announced the end of those carefree pleasures. He leaned across and kissed her on the neck.
What are you afraid of?
That you'll go back to England, or fall in battle, and I'll never even know your name.
Before I go back to England, I'll tell you.
Constance turned to Robin. For a moment, her big eyes seemed to blur, and then they overflowed with tears. It was an unexpectedly moving sight. Constance was a pretty girl, but her tears made her a beautiful one. She put her arms around his neck and snuggled up to him.
Why can't you tell me now? Please.
It's impossible.
We'll see about that, Lord Warringham. We'll see.
At long last, Prince Edward recovered from the sickness. Henry Fitzroy explained that because he hadn't been in the best of health even before the dysentery, they had feared for the prince's life for several days.
But he was a good patient. He bravely endured everything that his personal physician could dream up, and he prayed a lot too. Well, something did the trick in the end.
I'm glad. So, does this mean we'll be leaving soon? Brutus's hooves here are certainly ready for a journey. Aren't they, Brutus, old thing?
Yes, before the week is out, I'm told. The news from Aquitaine is quite alarming, so we need to get a move on.
Suits me fine. There's nothing I'd rather do than get out of this furnace.
You're looking well, though, Warringham. Little scruffy, perhaps, from all this horse husbandry. But you've made a good recovery.
You can't avoid getting dirty on this job. So tell me, if the prince was that sick, what were you doing with him all this time?
Oh, receiving messengers, rejecting messengers, forwarding messages, withholding messages. You know the sort of thing. By the way, whatever happened to our tent? Can't find it anywhere.
No, neither can I. All our things are at my sergeant's tent now.
And where have you been sleeping?
That's for me to know.
Oh, I see. What about Leofric?
Here and there. I don't know where he is every night. He goes his own way.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think you give that boy far too much freedom.
Yes, I know you do. Anyhow, I'm all finished here now. Fancy a drink?
Oh, don't have the time. I just stole a few minutes to come and find you. Then I have to go and discuss the details of our imminent departure with your friend and mine, Peter de Grey.
You lucky man. I wish you joy of it.
Hmm.
3 days later, the army broke camp in Valladolid. No tears were shed at their departure, although they knew that the way back across the Pyrenees would be fraught with obstacles. King Charles of Navarre, who had previously sided with Pedro and Edward, had now been bribed by Trastámara to close the routes through his territories. Edward had to negotiate with the King of Aragon to secure a safe passage for some of his army, and then announced that the remainder of his force would invade Navarre unless Charles capitulated. Faced with this threat, Charles allowed the English troops free passage through his land. And so it was that when they arrived back in Bordeaux in early September, it was not in one glorious company, but in dribs and drabs. And there they were welcomed by the news that Enrique of Trastámara had taken the city of Bagnères and was pillaging the countryside all around.
What's going to happen, Fitzroy? Do we have enough money to defend ourselves against Enrique?
Are you joking? Since Pedro swindled us, we don't even have money to pay the troops for the campaign in Castile. So our own soldiers have been ransacking the villages almost as much as Enrique's men. Edward couldn't pay them, so they started helping themselves to what they could find from the peasants.
Marvellous.
Prince Edward managed to persuade the captains of our dismissed troops to get themselves out of Aquitaine and go pillaging in France instead. So, we've got rid of that problem. The French king isn't going to be delighted, is he? And as for what we're going to do about Enrique, heaven knows.
What's Lancaster up to?
Going back to England, I hear, within the next few days.
Lucky him.
You want to go back?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm sure Lancaster would welcome you into his service.
What makes you think that?
Oh, come on, Warringham. It's hardly a secret that he enjoys your company. Didn't he keep on sending for you in Castile?
Oh, he was just bored. He wanted someone to play chess with.
He could have chosen 100 other people for that. Or do you play exceptionally well?
No, not at all.
There you are, then. I think you should go with him. There's nothing we can do here anyway. Not with the coffers empty. I'm sure the Black Prince would let you go.
Yes, I expect he would. I don't think I'm exactly his favourite.
Well, maybe we did make a bit of a mistake back there. The business with the Frenchman, I mean. We made things hard for ourselves. He really didn't understand it.
I hope I didn't get you into trouble.
No. What I said was my decision. And anyway, I think I convinced Prince Edward since then that he can count on me.
Yes, I think you have.
Robin smiled. Suddenly he understood why Fitzroy had been clinging like a limpet to the prince's side. Together they entered the great hall of Bordeaux Castle. It was still early evening, so only a few people were there. On a bench near the fire sat Constance, talking to a nursemaid who was looking after little Prince Richard. When she spotted Robin, she smiled. Back to the old routine, just like before. Nobody would have been able to tell from that smile that they knew each other any better now than they had done a year ago. The little prince took a few toddling steps away from his nurse on his plump little legs, wobbled for a moment, and then fell on his royal backside. He started bawling, and Constance scooped him up into her arms to comfort him. While Robin had been watching this little drama, Fitzroy had been watching Robin.
So, it's her, is it?
Anything wrong with that?
Not in the least, you lucky hound. I wish it were me. So, let me guess. You do want to go home to England, but you can't bear to drag yourself from her loving embrace.
As usual, Fitzroy, you've hit on the truth.
But it wasn't the truth. Robin knew that it wouldn't bother him very much to leave Constance, or Prince Edward, or Bordeaux. But as for going back to England, he knew it was a stupidly dangerous idea, and he dreaded to think what Leofric would say about it.
Well, it's none of my business, Warringham, but I wouldn't let a girl like that keep me here. You must know she won't be faithful to you anyway.
Tell me, why are you trying to persuade me to go back to England? Are you sick of the sight of me? Or is there something else I should know?
Not so loud, man. No, there's nothing I can tell you. Just offering my advice, that's all.
And what makes you want to give me this advice all of a sudden?
All right, look. The prince, he was very sick. He's still quite sick now. And that makes him irritable.
With everything that's going on, he can't afford to be sick. So, well, he's in a strange humour. Unpredictable. One minute he's all sweetness and light, the next minute he's angry, cynical. And definitely cynical whenever your name comes up. And, well, you understand what I'm saying. If he takes a dislike to someone, the Black Prince can be a dangerous man.
Oh, yes. That much I know.
So, why don't you go with Lancaster?
I need to think about it. Thank you, Fitzroy. And listen, if you'd rather sit with someone else from now on, I completely understand.
No, I won't do that. I'm already ashamed enough that I haven't spoken up in your defence.
No, don't be a fool. That wouldn't do either of us any good. Anyway, who knows? Maybe the prince has a point. I don't love him any more than he loves me. Perhaps that's why he doesn't trust me.
You'd never want any harm to come to him, though. I know you, Warringham. You're as true as a die.
I think I'll go and talk to Lancaster.